Here are some great stories for today's educators from the experts at Love and Logic, Jim Fay, Charles Fay, Ph.D., and Dr. Betsy Geddes. Enjoy!
See, a classroom is a place where a kid has to come down and sit down here in front of all of his friends who he desperately wants to impress and try to do something he doesn't think he can do. And it wouldn't matter if the other kids couldn't do it, because then he could point it out and he'd say, well, see, they can't do it. What's the big deal? But can a kid in your classroom find somebody else who can do it faster and quicker and neater and please the teacher more? Well, how many of you have kids in your classroom who raise their hands from time to time and say this? Pardon me, teach, please don't take this personally. But if it's all the same to you, I'd like to protect my fragile self-concept in this particular area of my life by avoiding this assignment. Do kids talk like that? Yes! But they talk in code. See, and great teachers can break the code. See, some kids say it this way. This stuff is boring. But others say it this way. This is stupid. And other kids say, I think I need to go to the bathroom. May I have a bathroom pass? And other kids say, who needs this? My dad didn't have to do this, and he makes a lot more money than you do. And gifted kids say it this way. This stuff is irrelevant. But they all have their unique way of saying this. If I try to do this assignment, I'm going to hurt too bad. Because I'm going to have to come face to face with the way I see myself. And it's a lot better to say, this stuff sucks. I don't have to do it. You can't make me do it. I'm not doing it and you can't make me. Than it is to have to come to grips with how bad you're going to feel if you try to do it and figure out you can't do it as well as you really want to do it. Now, how many teachers do you think I saw last year out of about 100,000 teachers? How many raised their hands and said this to me? Jim, what do you do with these kids in the classroom then who try to protect their fragile self-concepts by avoiding my assignments? How many times do you hear that in workshops? Or do teachers talk in code too? Yeah. How does it always sound? Jim, what do you do with these kids that just don't care? They just don't care. And they look like they don't care, don't they? Because they don't dare let you know how much they do care, because then they have to come face to face with how bad they hurt. But what if your mindset is that those kids don't care? You're going to have a pretty tough time, right? Because that's usually what happens with the Nazi in 109B. My job is to make these kids care. My job is to hurt them bad enough that they realize how bad they really are so that they will get with it. Well, how many of you are paid, by the way, by the district to say to kids something like this? Well, kids, I know you're trying to protect your fragile self-concept in this specific area of your life, so you're excused from this assignment. Not true, right? We paid to get the kids to do the job. Now, our research has been discovering something, and that is there are a couple unique conditions under which a kid might work harder for you and take a risk and do some of those things that he doesn't think he can do. But you have to find some unique conditions for that. And the first one, the Nazi is not going to want to hear. So if your Nazi stayed home today, that's going to be real good, isn't it? Because they're not going to like hearing this. And that's the first unique condition under which a kid would try harder for you than anybody else. He's fallen in love with you. He's fallen in love with you. And he would do something for you that he wouldn't do for anybody else on the face of the earth. Now, some teachers, they say, wait a minute, I'm not here for a personality contest. I'm here, I'm a teacher, I'm here to deliver instruction. Expect those kids to respect me. I don't want them to love me. In fact, I heard a teacher recently turn to a friend and said, when we were talking about relationships with kids, said, now why would I want to have a relationship with a kid like that? What would your advice be to that person? Get out of teaching now, quickly. Why do we need to get kids to fall in love with us? We don't have to. Kids who love themselves don't have to fall in love with us. Kids who love themselves can hate our guts and still perform in the classroom. We only need kids to fall in love with us when kids are damaged. Do you have any damaged kids in your classrooms now? Mm-hmm. Well, how does this all match with what you were taught in college? See, I'm going to say to you, there are two unique conditions under which a kid might try harder for you, and one is that they've fallen in love with you, and you need to be able to test whether or not that's happened. And from time to time, can you go to any kid in your classroom and say these magic words? Hey, pal, would you try that just for me? Thank you. And that waves a red flag right away because they say, wait a minute, I was trained that you're supposed to get the kid to do it for himself. That's what they taught us in college, right? They left out some information. They left out this information, this law of psychology that says a person will perform for the person he or she loves. And if he loves himself, he'll perform for himself. If he does not love himself, he has to do it for somebody else first. And they left out another piece of information for us and caused us to be very frustrated as teachers. And that piece of information is that if a kid has a low self-concept, does not love himself, it will be years, not days, years before he gets to the point where he does like himself. Our job is to try to take a little kid who enters our classes damaged and 13 years later get him to the point where he loves himself enough that he can perform for himself.
You have just listened to Jim Fay. Jim began his career as a teacher in public, private, and parochial schools. Jim has also been a school principal and administrator. Mr. Fay's teaching experience in both inner city and suburban schools led him to see a need to structure the educational environment in a way that would build positive relationships with students.
Professor I had when I was in grad school down at the University of South Carolina. I had six people in my graduate program. There were six people on earth that were dumb enough at that point in time to go and put themselves through that much pain. Well, this professor would hand us out the syllabus. It was like this thick. And then he'd step out of the room. And we'd all look through and, oh man, what a jerk we get to. This is six counseling cases, nine psychoed evaluations. Got to do this report that's 40 pages long. He'd walk back out in the room and he'd look real sympathetic. Oh, did I give you guys too much to do? Oh, I get so excited about working with you guys and all the things you're going to learn that sometimes I go overboard. Will you accept my apology? Just do half of that stuff. Pick half of the counseling cases that you want to do. Pick half of those reports that you want to do. And just do one, either that 40-page report or do that other evaluation. You decide about that, just as long as it's half. We're thinking, what a nice guy. Oh, man, he's so nice. He really cares about us. About a week later, we realize we're still doing twice as much as the other people ask us to do. Math assignment. Give the kid twice as much as you want. Wait for him to gasp. Oh, this sucks. I can't do all this. Oh, too much? Just do half. And you can do the first half or the second half. Or you could do every other one. Or guess what? You could even go through there and pick the easiest ones. Go through and find out which ones are easiest and just do the half that are the easiest. Of course, that takes more math than just doing all of them, right? When I give these choices, notice what I'm doing. Two options, each of which will make me happy. I don't say, would you like to do half of the assignment or just forget about it? Or would you like to stay with us and be sweet, or would you rather go to Disneyland? You know, ridiculous things. You know. Always give two options, each of which you are deliriously happy with.
You have just listened to Charles Fay, Ph.D. Dr. Charles Fay is a parent, consultant, and a nationally certified school psychologist. Thousands of educators, mental health professionals, and parents have profited from his wealth of practical, down-to-earth solutions to the most common and frustrating problems displayed by students of all ages.
How many school discipline plans are built on the concept of first infraction, minor consequence? Second infraction, a little bigger, and finally, boom, we have to do what we should have probably done the first time.
See, it's really more humane and kinder for us to deliver a good, strong consequence, wrap it in empathy, rather than delivering a bunch of little warnings or lectures, little consequences, gradually increasing the level, and then having a kid who can't be touched except for with a life and death consequence.
Yeah, see, this really gets to the heart of Love and Logic, because we do a lot of things different in Love and Logic than you do in other programs.
Sure.
But the sophistication level of Love and Logic is that we're able to do it because we understand the power of empathy to balance this out.
Right.
So that when we give that heavy dose of consequence, along with a heavy dose of empathy, the kid is forced to look at himself, his bad decision, as the source of his problem, instead of looking at us as the source of the problem, where if we'd have done it the old traditional way, heavy consequence, anger or no empathy, the kid sees us as the bad guy and does not get a chance to learn from his lesson.
One more problem with warnings. Do you think it might teach kids to have a distorted view of cause and effect? You suppose there's some kids that have been raised in the three strikes home, and they go on to the three strikes school district for a while, and now they have a little subconscious script in their mind that says this: ooh, if I do something really, really bad, something might happen after about three times.
Yeah, so nothing bad will happen to me without my being warned about it in advance.
At least 2 3/4 worth of times.
Yeah.
Now, what I want for my own child, what's safest for a kid, is for them to believe this: when I make poor decisions, something can happen without.
Right away.
Right, yeah. Without the reminders.
So bottom line is, here's an opportunity through learning how to use the interventions instead of consequences all the time for us to save up the consequences for the big deal.
The Love and Logic Institute provides educators with professional development products and training that teach practical solutions to make classroom management fun and rewarding instead of stressful and chaotic. Our goal is to provide an opportunity to make a lasting and positive influence in schools and communities.
If I said to you there's only one person's behavior in the whole wide world over which you have any control whatsoever, and on any given day that control is a wee bit iffy, who am I talking about? You. Okay? Now, most of us women do not believe it. But the reality is, I cannot change another person. I barely have a grip on myself. And the whole point of empowering is, when I change my behavior, I up the odds for you changing yours. There's no guarantee, but I simply up the odds. Kid comes in wearing hat. 7th day in a row, I've had it. So I just, from the front of the room, go, take that hat off. I'm sick and tired of coming in with it every day. Now, if I simply change my behavior, smile at the kid, say, good morning, Tom, nice to see you, mosey toward you, and when I get on top of you, say, I'd really appreciate it if you take the hat off, or say, where does the hat need to be? The only person's behavior I've changed is what? Mine. But have I upped the odds for the kid complying, yes or no? It's that simple. It's that simple, okay? So the issue of control. The second thing about control is that my power comes from controlling myself. I thought my power in life came from controlling you. Sit down, don't do this, do this. What I learned was my power comes from controlling myself. Okay? Let's take a kid. Most of us have a kid that we just kind of gets on our nerves, true or not true? Oh, yeah. So let's say one day we've had a bad morning. We come to school, the kid's really acting up, and we kind of go off. Now, I don't know if you've ever done this, so I'll just say I have, okay? Just let them have it. usually pointing the finger, calling from across the room, I'm sick and tired of this, yakety-yak. Every day this happens, out of this room, I yakety-yak. Now, as I'm yakety-yakking at this kid, you know what the other kids in the classroom see? They see all of my power flowing down my arm, out my finger, and into that kid. I begin to melt into a puddle on the floor like the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz. And that kid becomes engorged with my power, and every kid in the classroom knows it. That's what happens. Quite frankly, you guys, when you lose your temper in the classroom, you look like a fool. You lose your power. See, I don't like being called a fat white you-know-what lady. It doesn't make my day. But I know kids will call me things, and my power comes from controlling myself. See, you say, you're a fat, white, red-headed, whatever. Okay? Now, I can go off on the kid, in which case my power flows out, or I can use some empowering techniques. I might say, what would be a better way to let me know you're mad? Call me all those names, or say, Dr. Geddes, I'm really mad. I might say, I need you to step out in the hall. I'll be out in a minute, and we can talk. I might say, what's your best guess as to what might happen if you don't drop those things and revert back to Dr. Geddes? I might say, do you think you and I can get this language under control, or do you think we're going to have to get your parents involved? See, in empowering, I am teaching the behaviors I want to see in the kid as I am disciplining the kid. Discipline and punishment are two different things. I'm not talking about punishment here. I'm talking about teaching the behaviors I want to see as I interact with you. That's the whole point. It's not the way most of us were raised. There is not one of you in this room who does not know in your school the teachers the kids can mop up the floor with and the teachers the kids don't even bother with. True or not true? So the real fundamental question today becomes, what kind of teacher do you want to be?
You have just listened to Dr. Betsy Geddes. Dr. Geddes talks from her experiences as a teacher, administrator, consultant, college instructor, parent, and grandparent. She is known for her humorous yet practical approach to dealing with kids in today's fast-paced, complicated, and sometimes difficult and dangerous world. With love and logic, educators will become equipped with practical techniques that are simple and easy to learn, teach responsibility and character, change lives and lower stress levels, and have an immediate and positive effect on students and schools. Since 1984, Love and Logic has been changing lives. For more information on the many easy-to-use Love and Logic products and seminars in your area, phone 800-338-4065. Or visit our website at www.loveandlogic.com.
Thank you for listening to our CD, Funny Stories for the Classroom. I'm Dr. Charles Fay, president of loveandlogic.com, and I'm here with Jim Fay, my dad and co-founder of the Love and Logic Institute. And Dad, tell the listeners about how Love and Logic got started. I mean, what kind of spurred you on to do this?
You know, I used to be a principal down in the inner city of Denver. Kids came from the Federal Housing Project. Love those kids. Boy, were they street smart. They could find their way anywhere in the city of Denver without somebody holding their hand.
So those kids, what do you think made them so street smart?
I think that when they're in a situation there where they don't have all the support and the micromanaging that other kids have, they tend to say, well, you know, if nobody's going to take care of this, maybe I better learn how.
So when kids really have to solve their problems and they're in situations where they can't just throw their problem off on an adult, then they're more likely to learn that they can handle life on their own. And I think what I remember you talking about as a kid, and by the way, listeners, I think my dad... He did something that significantly increased the odds that I'd become a psychologist someday. And that was experiment on me and my sisters. I say the reason I became a psychologist is just to figure out what happened to me when I was a little kid. But, you know, you came home and you talk about those kids down there at Greenlee Elementary School, and you'd say, you know, it's really a shame because in a lot of ways they don't get enough supervision. Right. And their parents aren't involved enough in their lives, really, because the parents were too busy having to feed the family, and they didn't have a lot of support, you know. And so the kids were having to pretty much learn how to negotiate life on their own. But one of the things that that did for those kids was it taught them, you know, that, hey, you know, you've got to figure out how to solve these problems. And then you got this other job. And we thought it was going to be so great. Tell us about your other job.
That was in a totally different community where there was lots and lots of money. Kids had everything. If you said, we're going to have a unit on Switzerland, they say, no big deal. I was there last year, you know.
Yeah, I've been there six times already.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's where our other house is. Yeah.
But what was so amazing was that these kids couldn't remember anything. You know, they would come in the morning and they would rush to the telephone. Our telephones were overwhelmed with them calling their parents to bring all the stuff that they had forgotten to bring to school. It just, I thought, I'm going to have to build a helicopter pad to land all these helicopter parents who are hovering over their kids.
And what you started seeing was that the parents were jumping in there and always solving the problems for the kids. So essentially what happened was you came from a area where the parents were underinvolved to an area where the parents were
over-involved.
Yeah. And you saw the results where the over-involved parents were creating kids who didn't believe that they were capable of solving their own problems and believe that there was no such thing as cause and effect.
Yeah.
You know, cause and effect is for other people, not me,
yeah, right?
Right. And so you started putting some ideas together about how do we get the best of both worlds?
Exactly.
Where we can be involved with our kids and guide them and show them lots of love and set those limits. But at the same time, allow them to make enough mistakes and struggle with those mistakes. You know, when the price tag is small, when they're not life and death mistakes, struggle with those mistakes a little bit with guidance from an adult, you know, and get the best of both worlds, where we have happy, respectful, responsible kids. And about that time, you really got interested in the application at school, because the CD that people just listened to was about what? Teaching, right?
And teaching, working, yeah, classroom.
Working with kids in the classroom. And there's one big commonality here, really. And what you found is that there were two types of parents who held their kids accountable, but only one type of those two that really created kids who had self-control and really learned from their mistakes. And one type was kind of like you before Love and Logic, you know. And so I wouldn't do my chores. And this is, folks, here's dirt on Jim Fay. This is Jim Fay before Love and Logic. You know, for crying out loud, how many times do I have to tell you, do your chores? Well, that's it. That's it. You're grounded. You're not, you know, yelling, lectures, threats, you know, that sort of thing. But he'd hold me accountable. Old school, right?
There you go.
Yeah, and I spent most of my time thinking, you know, when I make bad decisions, it makes my dad mad. So next time I don't think I'm going to get caught. You know, or I'll figure out some way to manipulate the situation so he's not so mad, you know. And then I remember you guys, you blew my mind, because you learned this whole heart of Love and Logic, the heart, you know, the part of Love and Logic that really opens the door for success. And I remember I didn't do my chores one time, and you came to me, and I'm all ready, you know, for the lecture. I'm bracing myself. And instead, you know, you're sad. And then you say, oh, this is such a bummer. What? I didn't do your chores. And now you want to go to Randy? Yeah, Randy's going to have a little party. Will you take me over there, please? All the kids are going to be over there, and we're going to play on the swings and ride bikes. Oh, I bet that's going to be fun. Only problem is that we used up all of our thriving time doing your chores, so hang in there, buddy. And you patted me on the shoulder and you walked away. And I remember thinking, wait a second. He was nice. You know, I wanted to hate you so bad, but you were too nice. You know? And before long, I started developing this mindset where it was like, you know, when I make poor decisions, you know, it makes my life stink, you know. And before long, I started thinking, you know, maybe I shouldn't make so many of those poor decisions. So, listeners, the core of Love and Logic, the heart of it, the door that opens it up to success is that empathy. And tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, we were starting to learn a little bit about that at this new school because we were desperate. But the last thing I needed was for kids to go home and say, well, I forgot my homework and they were really mean.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So we were discovering about the use of empathy first, consequence next. But we still had parents who would say, well, but you're not really helping the kids when you just hand them back the problem. And we finally learned that there's another technique, and it's called guiding kids to own and solve their own problems.
Yeah, that's
five
right.
Steps.
Yeah, there's
yeah.
five steps with that, and it's powerful.
Yeah.
We use it with employees.
Uh-huh.
And we use it with spouses.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we use it with kids.
And great counselors and great therapists use it with
you know,
their
there's,
clients.
No, but there's one area that it doesn't seem to work that well with.
Tell me.
Using it with your parents when you're older. the five steps for helping kids own and solve their problems, it's integrated into practically every product, presentation, everything we do here at loveandlogic.com. If you're interested in finding out more about Love and Logic, you can get on our website, loveandlogic.com. We have a lot of free handouts and tips. Okay, you can go and call us up, and something really magical happens. If you call between the hours of 7 and 5, you know, 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, Monday through Friday. What happens?
I asked this in a presentation the other day. I said, has anybody ever called the Love and Logic Institute? And this lady yelled out real fast, a real person answers the phone.
Yes,
and somebody else said, no, it couldn't happen. Yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, we're real proud of that because I think the reason we do that is because we've called so many places. You know, we've bought some gadget and we call to get some customer service, or maybe we even want to buy another gadget and we get this answering machine, you know, and the worst, of course, are the ones where you have to push in the letter, the first three letters of the person's name.
Oh,
have you ever
that.
Found one
oh.
of those that works?
Never had it work.
I think it's just a trick.
Yeah.
They hope that you'll hang out. But you get to talk to a real person. And, you know, we'd love to hear from you. And give us a call. Ask us what we do. We'll probably ask you, you know, what is a big challenge for you? You know, are you a teacher? Are you a parent? What's the biggest thing that probably led you to call, you know? And we can put a product or maybe even something free right in your hand so that you can go out and have a better life with your kids and your students at school. The phone number, which you think we ought to give that to them since we're talking about...
I think we've teased everybody long enough on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's 800-338-4065. Again, that's 800-338-4065. And I bet if you pick up your sleeve to this CD and look at it, I would guess that part of our blatant advertising campaign is that phone
right
number.
There.
Yeah.
Right there.
And it's fun to have this business because it is a business. We're capitalists, you know. But at the very same time, we get to go to bed every night thinking about all the people who've had their lives changed with this and have happier kids and happier lives. And that's a good feeling, isn't it?
Sure, it's great. That's what keeps me going at this age.
Yeah, yeah, and you are old.
No, but I'm still loving it.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and give us a call. That's 800-338-4065, or you can go to our website. That's loveandlogic.com. Or if you forget everything except for Love and Logic, you type into your search engine on your computer, Love and Logic, first one will pop up will probably be us. Thanks again. Have fun with your kids.